You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Welcome to Unbiased Science, where we bring scientific method to the madness. I'm your host and public health scientist, Dr. Jess Steyer. And today I am joined by a very special guest, Dr. Joey Munoz, to talk all things nutrition. Is it okay if I call you Joey for the purpose of this episode?
For sure.
Okay, perfect. Cool. And I'm obviously Jess, so yes. All right. So there's lots that we're going to talk about today. I think it'll end up being a pretty, for lack of a better word, organic conversation. We'll just talk broadly about nutrition. I'm going to pick Joey's brain about things like supplements, a popular food app that I've received hundreds of messages about, and more. So before we dig in, let me introduce our guest for today. Dr. Joseph Joey Munoz is a nutritional sciences PhD who graduated from the Florida State University in 2020. His goal is to help individuals achieve their physique goals using scientifically based approaches. His academic research as a graduate student focused on investigating the role of different foods in the prevention and improvement of certain diseases, mainly osteoporosis and diabetes. Additionally, he's been involved in conducting several clinical trials and has published scientific articles, taught undergraduate courses in nutrition as well as anatomy, has presented his research findings in academic conferences, including the American Society for Nutrition. So Joey, your page on, for certainly everyone should be following you on Instagram. Your handle is dr.joeymunoz. Is that right?
Correct. Doctor, just DR.
Yeah.
Trying to appeal to authority there.
I love it. All right. So the other thing, Joey, is that you have an online coaching company for diet and nutrition. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. First and foremost, thank you so much for the introduction. That was so much more formal than I've ever introduced myself in a long time. It's been a minute since I've been involved in academia, but thank you so much for the introduction. Yeah. And since I don't do academia anymore, I guess I would consider myself an entrepreneur. I own an online health and fitness coaching company. I work with clients one-on-one to help them improve their overall health and body composition through nutrition and exercise-based recommendations. My whole thing is sustainability, so having a habit-focused approach towards nutrition. And then aside from one-on-one coaching, we also have our coaching membership, which is great for individuals who maybe don't want to work with somebody one-on-one, but still want some structure and accountability. So that's pretty much who I am and what I do in a nutshell.
And you have your own podcast, is that right?
Correct. Yes, the Dr. Joey Munoz Show, because I couldn't think of anything more original than my own name.
I love it. So actually, Joey, before we dig in, I'm curious, do you ever get people, and I hope I could ask this, I want to pick your brain a little bit. The fact that you have monetized, right, your expertise, your skill set, this is something that you have trained to do and you're providing a service for people. How do you, like, do you ever get pushback or flack about that? Can we talk about this? Because I'm just going to be totally transparent that I get accused all the time of being a quote unquote show. I have not actually figured out how to monetize this aside from some, you know, small partnerships, sponsorships, but really we're talking small potatoes.
Yeah.
And it frustrates me because I feel like our time and expertise have value, right? And just as everyone, you know, we all have bills to pay, mortgages, all that good stuff. People are working for money. So it's something that frustrates me. I'm just curious for your take on it.
Yeah. First and foremost, I ignore like 99% of the messages that I get because people are just ridiculous, right? But as far as the monetization thing, like how do I deal with this personally? Because it is annoying, right? And it's frustrating. People will say things like, why should we trust you? You're just another coach selling programs online or whatnot. And it's true. I do sell stuff online. And I feel like we all do something for a career, right? Whether we decide to, I don't know, in our field, be in academia or be a dietitian or whatever it is, we all have to make a living. So that's the first thing like usually comes to mind that helps me not be bothered by what people are saying, right? Half the times it's just people trolling anyways. But in terms of a the perspective that I have on this, I guess, is maybe what would be helpful to share. And I've been reading more like business and marketing books recently because I want to learn how to grow my business, right? And I think the perspective that really helps me be okay with monetizing my services and wanting to grow my business is understanding that people are going to spend their money anyways, right? People are going to spend their money. If somebody's looking for health and fitness information, they're going to first consume some free content and then they're likely going to spend money somewhere, right? And I think if you're somebody who has a coaching service or sells a course or a book or whatever it may be, if you truly believe in your product, right, you know you're not a scammer. I know I'm not a scammer. Like I see the results that my clients get. I stand by everything that I do. I know I provide a good service. I think it is my responsibility to try to get people to purchase my product over somebody else's product that may be not as good or, for lack of a better term, bullshit, right? Because there's a lot of really bad stuff online. And so if somebody's going to spend $50 on whatever it is, they can come across some random person's content that they might buy and at best might not help them at all. And at worst might actually do damage, right? So as individuals working in this field, I think it's our responsibility to really help people to the best of our ability. And there are people that are going to be paying customers. And realistically, we can only do so much for free, right? So the way that I see it is like, hey, I put a lot of time and effort and focus in developing products that I think are really, really good and actually help people improve their overall health and fitness. I want to share this with you. I'm never really pushy when it comes to sales. I simply just present what I do. I present what my clients have achieved. And if you are looking for a service that's going to help you improve overall health and fitness, I'm your guy, right? That's kind of the mindset that I have. So when people talk about like, you're just selling something online, it's like, yes, I need to sell something online because I need to live. I have a family to provide for. That said, I think I have a really high quality service. And since I do have a good service, I stand behind it and I promote it because I don't feel like I'm a scammer, even though that's what people say online. Mm-hmm. Right? That's pretty much right. My overall perspective on that.
That makes total sense to me. And I mean, the fact that we're now living this digital life, You're offering a service online that people can purchase and partake in all over the, I don't know if your clients are all over the country or even outside of the country, but it allows you to reach a wider audience. I'm asking sort of just on a personal level, because it's something that I guess, you know, this world of science communication, it's something that even I myself have said, you know, beware of people who are trying to sell you things. But it's more than that. It's not so black and white. You know, if they're trying to sell you things that don't have any evidence to support them or, you know, are not science-based. And so in the science communication world, I feel like when I'm putting out information, if people get a whiff of me trying to sell something, it's like, oh, she's just trying to sell something, and automatically discredited. But at the same time, I love science communication and I'm trying to figure out a way to make this my main gig. Yeah. And why shouldn't they be monetized? Yeah. So it's just something that I myself am grappling with. I have total respect for what you're doing and I think it makes total sense. I just wanted to get that out of the way. Just in case anyone has that question. But speaking of other things that people are selling, let's talk supplements.
Sure.
Because supplements, I don't know if maybe you put supplements in a different category. How do you feel about people who are selling supplements, or how do you feel even more, you know, broadly about supplements? And then, of course, I'll give my two cents.
Yeah, I think supplements are fine. I have no issue with supplements. I have issues with the claims that are made around supplements. Because there's nothing wrong with supplements, and some supplements can be beneficial in certain contexts. I think there's a couple of things here. Like, people need to understand that supplements are just that, they're supplemental, right? They're not going to outweigh the negative impacts of like poor lifestyle, right? And poor lifestyle, including exercise, sleep, stress management, nutrition, etc. And I include all those because we often think like, I feel like a lot of people think like nutrition is the only thing that matters. And nutrition is really important, but like, it's only a component, right? It's only a piece of the pie. There's so many important things. Like if you have a really healthy diet, but you don't exercise and you don't sleep well, like that's also not good. Right. And if you have a poor diet and you guys get the point, like all of the different factors really matter. And I mentioned that because people like to take supplements or want a supplement to like cover up their deficiencies when it comes to overall lifestyle. Right. And we need to understand that supplements, for the most part, have a very minimal impact. Even when we look at the research literature, like even supplements that help tend to help very little. And supplements that have big impacts tend to be those that help somebody if they have a particular deficiency in a certain vitamin or mineral, right? So when people ask me, should I take vitamin D supplements? That's a really popular one. It's like, well, are you deficient in vitamin D? No, then you probably don't need it. It won't hurt, but it's right. probably not going to benefit you as much as like the claims that you see online claim that it's going to help, right? So for me, when it comes to supplements, coming from a like maybe more sports nutrition background as well, the things that I tend to recommend to most people that I think most people would benefit from are creatine for body composition, because there's just an overwhelming amount of evidence showing that creatine is beneficial. And you can get creatine from your diet, just not at the appropriate dose of 5 grams per day. Protein supplementation, even though I don't consider protein a supplement, it's really just food, but in powder form, so we call it a supplement. Most people have a hard time meeting their protein needs from just food, so protein's great. I tend to say, like, if you want to take a multivitamin, that's fine to just cover your bases, right? Because most of us probably don't get every single nutrient from our diet. And taking a multivitamin is cheap and effective. And hey, if you know it's not doing much, you're just going to pee it out anyways. It's not that big of a waste of money either. And then potentially an omega-3 supplementation, especially if people don't consume enough omega-3 from seafood or other plant-based sources. Those are the main ones that I think most people could probably benefit from because, one, they've been shown to be effective, and two, they're pretty cheap, right? Mm-hmm. So that's like general health and sports performance type of supplements. If we go a step beyond that, then we have like more specific type of supplements. And I honestly don't even know like what's being marketed nowadays because I don't keep up with the supplement world at all. But I know that people make really ridiculous claims about supplements and then charge a load of money. For example, I know somebody like Gary Brecka sells like methylated B vitamins, right? And there's like this whole marketing scheme behind it where he says that they're like 100 times more effective than normal B vitamins. And it's just made up. Like there's really no research to support those things. So in that area, like there's no evidence to support that like methylated B12 is better than just a B12 supplement, right? And that's where things really start to bother me because people take advantage of the fact that other individuals don't know anything.
Right.
And so they're really good marketers. They come up with a message that sounds really appealing and then they make a ton of money off of it. And the thing is, they take something like a B vitamin, which is dirt cheap, and they market it in a unique way and make it really expensive, right? And that's the part that really bothers me more than anything. Mm-hmm. I guess that would be my overall take on supplements there. And we can go a little bit deeper on specific ones if you'd like.
Before we hit record, I was, you know, obviously we were chatting a little bit and I was saying my overall approach to supplements is I feel like 99% of the time they're going to be unnecessary, right? Unless you have a deficiency, unless you are pregnant or trying to get pregnant, unless you're elderly, you know, we know that there are certain deficiencies. But, you know, I struggle for all the reasons that you struggle. They tend to be the claims that people make about these things. Yeah. I mean, first of all, there's all kinds of issues with labeling. There have been studies done that look at the actual ingredients versus what's on the labels. And more often than not, something is either not disclosed or it's not disclosed in the proper amount, or, you know, there are all kinds of issues with that. I've spoken at length about how supplements are not regulated in the same way that medications are regulated, right? So it sort of feels like the Wild West. And it always frustrates me when people are so critical of, you know, medications or vaccines, and they're talking about, oh, we don't have enough evidence, but then they'll run and take a supplement that has absolutely no data except maybe some really teeny tiny preclinical study or something. It's just, it's mind-boggling to me. So I think the hypocrisy of it all really frustrates me. To your point, I think, you know, if someone's taking a supplement, it's probably not going to do harm. I do think it tends to come from a place of privilege. Like if you're able to take a supplement, like, you know, these things are expensive and they're probably not necessary. And we know we can get the majority of our nutrients through diet and it's better to get through diet. But as you said, like sometimes I'll go through a week where I'm just really stressed. I'm head down doing work and I'm eating Rice Krispie treats instead of having a salad, you know, or whatever it is. And I don't know. At the same time, we've also talked about, you know, there can be toxicity, right? Certain supplements, there are drug interactions, you can overdose on certain ingredients and supplements. So there are things that people should be aware of. They're not, sure. It's not this harmless, right? It's not totally harmless and benign. You can't, yeah. I don't know. I just wanted to say that. I'm glad that you brought up vitamin D, Joey, because I get a bunch of people who live in colder climates in particular. I know you live in Florida. I'm here in Western Mass and it's April and we had snow a week ago. So what would you say to people who, you know, they're like, oh, but I live in a colder climate. I'm not getting so much sun. I feel like I'm vitamin D deficient. I want to hear more about vitamin D. And I also am curious about the whole diagnosis of a deficiency, because I think there are two, I mean, there's lots we could talk about, but two things stand out. One is a lot of times companies will sell these tests to diagnose deficiencies, but then they also happen to sell you the supplement to address the deficiency. Yeah. And two, there are lots of issues with our healthcare system and people can't always get in to their physician to get a diagnostic panel, or maybe they're not testing for specific things. And so people will say, well, how do I know if I have a deficiency? So what do you say to people?
Yeah, that's a tough one in those different circumstances, right? Like my general recommendation is like get blood work done at least once a year. Just know where you're at baseline with most things, right? Now, in that follow-up question that you asked, in the circumstance that somebody doesn't have access to getting blood work done, I'm unsure. I really don't know how I would address that situation, right? Because it's difficult. Like, there's a very direct way of knowing whether or not you're deficient. Get some blood work done, see what your results show. If you're deficient, supplementation can be helpful. The thing about like colder climate or where you live, it's difficult to give a blanket recommendation that's applicable to everybody. Because some people will be able to convert more vitamin D in low sunlight than others, right? Just based off genetics, skin color, et cetera. There's a whole host of factors. So if somebody just came to me like, hey, I live in a colder climate, should I take vitamin D? I can't really answer that question with just that, right? I will say this, like vitamin D supplementation itself seems to be pretty damn safe. And if you can afford it and want to take it, it's probably not going to cause much harm unless you're taking like ridiculously high doses. Because I know sometimes people do recommend insanely high doses for reasons that aren't really substantiated. The main recommendation I give all my clients, whether it's vitamin D or magnesium or whatever it is that they're looking into, is like, hey, just go get some blood work done. Whatever you're deficient in, we should try to address your diet. And if we can't really make many modifications in your diet for whatever reason, then let's take a supplement and that should help. That's generally my approach to anything related to supplementation. I'm not sure if you wanted to go a slightly different direction with that question.
No. You hit the nail on the head. This is the conversation. I think that, you know, I'm sort of having my moment coming into my own as a science communicator, and I'm reflecting on some things that have come out of my own mouth where it's like I've made it black and white, where it's like all sudden you don't ever need supplements. And it's not that I'm backtracking, but I think that it's like you're alluding to, there's no one size fits all. We have to take things on a case by case basis. Again, I tend to think supplements are over-marketed. They make claims that are often not substantiated. There are issues with labeling. Yeah. There is a lack of regulation. There are lots of issues. And I don't think that the immediate thought for most people should be, oh, let me go out and get a bunch of supplements. You know, I don't. Yeah. I think we all want there to be literally a magic pill for us to take that's going to improve our health. I think the reality is a lot, as we both know, a lot more nuanced. But then also realizing there are issues to like access to care, access to testing to be properly diagnosed. It's tricky. So I guess I'm happy to have this conversation that introduces those different variables, that nuance. I don't know. Like I just, one of my very best friends, she was talking about how she's so exhausted lately and she thinks she might have an iron deficiency. She also has celiac and some other stuff. So she's feeling like even when she tries to increase her iron intake from food, there might be some malabsorption issues and she's not getting enough. She is making an appointment with her physician, but in the meantime, she's like, I'm going to go out and take some iron supplements just in case. And so again, in that situation, it's like, I'm not going to judge. I understand, you know, there's a problem. She's trying to address it. In the meantime, she's doing, you know, she's taking supplements. But I guess for me, I also just want people to be aware, like, even if it's a supplement that's all natural or herbal or whatever it is, yeah, that does not mean it's 100% safe or that there won't be interactions or that there can't be toxicity. And the other thing I like to remind people, I always say the dose makes the poison, but the dose also makes the benefit. So if someone is making a claim about a particular ingredient that's in a supplement, I'm trying to think of an example, of course, right this second I can't. It's like the amount in reality that you'd actually need to consume to see a clinical benefit is likely not what you're getting in a, you know, in a supplement. So there's just lots to consider. So I just, I'm glad that we had that chat. So yeah, thank you.
And I wanted to add one last thing, like, typically, the supplements that are marketed and people are making a ton of money off of are like pretty unique things, right? They're not really basic stuff. Like, you don't hear people marketing just a multivitamin and like making a ton of money off it, right? Like, because there's nothing really there to like claim about just the multivitamin that gives you basic vitamins and minerals, right?
Right.
And that's why I do tell most people, like, hey, best place to start if you were going to take something is probably just something like a multivitamin to cover your bases. If you know that you're not eating enough fruits and veggies and you don't have enough variety in your diet, and maybe you got blood work done last year and your doctor told you you're deficient in certain things, like, I would say, and I'm not going to say 100% here, but maybe 99.99% of people aren't going to have any sort of harm from just taking a safe multivitamin, right? And there are reputable companies that are very big companies that have had their products tested. If you look for like, is it GMP, good manufacturing practices, right? There are certain like, essentially like certifications, or I forget the correct word here, but there are certain like, certifications essentially that can increase your trust in a particular brand, right? So like Nature's Made is like a huge brand that sells multivitamin. And they have like the GMP certification on there, which means that it's been tested and it has what it says that it has. And the multivitamin is not $100 a month. You're maybe spending like 10 to 15 cents per day on your multivitamin, which for most people is affordable, right? So I'd say for most people, that's probably the best place to start. And that's probably what you're going to get the most benefit from anyways. And it's, even then, it's still going to be a small benefit compared to everything else. Where it starts to get tricky is when people start to market stuff that is like kind of off the radar, right? Like some herbal supplements, for example. These herbal supplements do X, Y, Z. And full disclosure, like, I work with a supplement company. I work with Outwork Nutrition, which is Lane Norton Supplement Company. And I align with the company because we disclose every single ingredient that we put in our supplements. We disclose the quantity that we put in the supplement. We cite the research that we use to provide the claims, and we don't make any ridiculous claims at all. Right. So I say that because I do think there are supplement companies trying to do a good job and not necessarily like make ridiculous claims either. For example, you were talking about dosing, right? A big issue in the sports nutrition field, which I know is a little bit different than just like general health supplements, but there's a lot of overlap here, is how popular the use of proprietary blends are, right? It's like, oh, we have a proprietary blend and these are the ingredients we have, but we're not telling you the amount of the ingredients. That's an issue. I tell people, if you see a proprietary blend, just don't buy it. A supplement should tell you exactly what's in it and the quantity, right? So and the reason why a lot of sports supplements do this is because from a pre-workout perspective, they underdose. That's just plain and simple. Like, they underdose and they put a couple of cheap ingredients in there that don't really do much, and it's marketed to be unique. And for example, with Outwork Nutrition, we take the opposite approach. We just include a couple of things that have been shown to be effective. When we talk about pre-workouts, there's really two main things we're looking for. One, a stimulant. It's mainly just caffeine, right? We know caffeine can improve sports performance. And we include a couple of things that help with essentially blood flow. So things like citrulline malate, beta-alanine, which can help buffer blood pH. So prevents lactate buildup, essentially, which helps you perform a little bit better. But those are the main three ingredients. Now, people see this and they're like, and they compare it to something else that has like a bunch of ingredients. And it's funny because in the sports supplement field, like, more ingredients, people tend to think it's better. And then in like the nutrition space, people that don't know what they're talking about, they're like, all these ingredients. It's funny how different those two perspectives are. But it's like, there are supplement companies trying to do a good job too, right? Like, if you present the ingredients in your product, if you're thinking about whether or not a company is reputable or not. It's hard to tell, but these are some signs that I think I would look for. Clear outline of what the ingredients are, right? Two, like, are the claims substantiated by research? Most supplement companies will cite their studies on their website. And most people don't have the skills necessary to read research correctly, so that's a difficult one to tell. But two, like, do they list the exact amounts of every ingredient? A lot of supplements don't. They just tell you it's their secret proprietary blend, and that's just, again, BS, for lack of a better term. And three is just, like, what claims do they make, right? On our website, for example, we seriously state, we're like, this is not going to give you any crazy sports performing benefits. This is just to help support everything that you're doing with your workouts and your nutrition. It might give you a small boost in performance, which is true, which could help long term. From a marketing perspective, doesn't make us as much money, but we feel good about the message that we put out.
Mm-hmm. Is it specific to, because I'm actually not familiar with the supplement, is that specific to athletes? This is a sports supplement?
Yes. So at Work Nutrition, we sell, like, I guess, performance related supplements. I was going to say for lifting, but really is applicable for any sort of performance related endeavor. So the pre-workout is to just help boost performance slightly during training, like boost arousal essentially. So if you take some caffeine, you're going to boost arousal, right? And improving blood flow can help with nutrient delivery and oxygen delivery during exercise. So citrulline malate is probably the most popular ingredient used there. And the issue with something like citrulline malate is that it can be pricey. So a lot of people put it in proprietary blends and give you like half the dose that you actually need. When the truth is you need 6 to 8 grams based off the research that we have to really improve blood flow and increase nitric oxide production. That's the main mechanism there. So yes, that's a sport-specific supplement. We have a whey protein. We have a recovery supplement that helps with like muscle soreness and stuff like that. But they're all just like very basic ingredients, no ridiculous claims. And the research is cited on the website, which is something that I really like. And that's why I support that company. Hmm. But most companies in the sports nutrition field, like, do the exact opposite.
Right.
So there's a lot of bad stuff out there for sure.
So before we hit record, this is unrelated, somewhat related, tangentially related. I was saying that last night when I was trying to fall asleep, and of course, my way of doing that is by picking up my phone and scrolling through TikTok to stimulate my brain right before sleep. And I was seeing, I guess there's this viral trend on TikTok about a glycine. I don't know if it's a supplement, if it's a powder. I don't know exactly how it's being sold. But first of all, we should talk about what glycine is and whatever. But people are buying industrial grade glycine based on some claims being made on TikTok about how it can be, I forget what the exact claims are, but it's like broadly good for brain health, gut health, good for, you know, your cognitive, whatever. You know, there are some claims about it. So people are running out and buying this from some industrial factory, I believe, out of China. And the reality is, Joey, I'm sure you could explain much better than I could, is that glycine, and tell me if I'm wrong here, it's a non-essential amino acid that we typically get from a variety of different foods, meats, veggies, legumes, you know, all kinds of stuff. And except in extremely rare circumstances, people are typically never deficient in glycine, and there really wouldn't be a reason to supplement, period, let alone with an industrial grade glycine.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we were talking about this in the general context of how people market these things, because it's the same message behind every set, whether it's glycine or arginine or whatever amino acid or whatever nutrient, right? It's always the same exact thing. So first and foremost, when people say this thing, fill in the blank, we'll use glycine here, is beneficial for brain health, mm-hmm. your gut health, whatever the claim is, right? It typically comes from the fact that these things, again, fill in the blank, play a role in the metabolism of that organ, mm-hmm. right? So I'm sure glycine plays a certain role in brain health.
Right.
I'm sure glycine plays a certain role in gut health. The same way that I can say that water is important for brain health and gut health and muscle health.
Right.
Because if you don't have water, you are dehydrated and you could die, right? So you could fill in the blank there with water, something super basic, right? That everybody understands. You can fill in the blank and say the same thing for sodium. And actually, sodium's another one that's marketed a lot, right? They don't say sodium, they'll say an electrolyte supplement, but it's just table salt. It's just flavored table salt for the most part. And it's like salt is important for muscle contraction. It's important for brain health. It's like, yes, that is true. It is important, right? If you don't have sodium, your body will not function properly. Now, the question, that's just like baseline level, what the claims are being based off of. And that's all that people go by, right? Nobody thinks a little bit beyond that. And what you have to think about a little bit beyond that is the main question to ask is, just because this thing is important for X, Y, Z, does it mean that supplementing with this thing will improve X, Y, Z? Because those two things are not synonymous. Like you mentioned, Jess, you get more than enough glycine from your diet. If you are not deficient in protein, you are not deficient in glycine. If you live in the US, you're likely not deficient in protein, right? And deficient in protein, like, it's pretty difficult to be deficient in protein. I mentioned that because I don't know what your audience is, but my audience, everybody's like focused on body composition and weight loss and all this stuff. And so protein is a popular topic, and we tend to talk about protein, optimal protein recommendations for body composition, which is very different than protein requirements to not be deficient, right? It's very, very different. So being deficient in protein is actually pretty difficult. If you, live in the US and have a varied diet, you probably are not deficient in protein. If you were, you'd know, because you have some pretty bad symptoms. But you're not deficient in glycine, right? And all of these things, just because something is important for something doesn't mean that more will benefit that thing, mm-hmm. right? So if I drink more water, it's not going to necessarily be better. If I take more salt, it's not necessarily going to be better. Our bodies require a certain amount to function properly. And if we take more than that certain amount, it may or may not be helpful. In many contexts, it doesn't really do anything, right? So when people talk about these claims, like, the main thing to do is not say glycine helps gut health. The important thing to look at is, are there clinical studies in populations that resemble myself that show benefit with this supplement, right? Because, and the reason why I bring this up, and by the way, I know nothing about the literature on glycine, okay? But for example, for gut health, first off, is there research showing that glycine improves gut health? And this is such a nuanced conversation, because when we talk about gut health, we have to make sure we're talking about the particular outcomes that we're interested in. But let's say those things align, right? Let's say those things align. Or let's say we just use the term inflammation, because people talk about inflammation a ton, right? Does glycine help inflammation or gut health or brain health or whatever it is? There needs to be clinical research on this, meaning that there are studies where they've taken humans and given them the supplement, and they see an improvement in the outcome relative to a placebo. And relative to a placebo is very important, because most things that you give people will benefit the outcome because of the placebo effect. So you need to give people an actual placebo to compare to make sure that the supplement that you're giving is better than a placebo, right? Because if it's not better than a placebo, then it's not really telling you much. Now, that is step one. Let's say you look at the research on glycine and gut health, and there is no research showing that it benefits gut health. Then that's a quick search there. Like, it doesn't really benefit, right? The second aspect is, like, let's say there are some benefits. That doesn't mean that it's going to benefit everyone, right? You have to look at now the population that's being studied. And now let's say that the population is somebody with a particular chronic disease, let's say Crohn's disease. Again, I know nothing about glycine supplementation. I'm just speaking out loud here, but the type of thought process that you should have when you try to look at these things. Okay, I have Crohn's disease. There seems to be some benefits of glycine for gut health. Let's see if it's specific in individuals with Crohn's disease. Okay, it is beneficial in people with Crohn's disease. Now you can be pretty confident that glycine supplementation may help you specifically, because that's the question you're trying to answer. And the third question to answer, if you're deciding on, like, which glycine supplement to take, you've purchased a glycine supplement, is, what was the form that was given in the study and at what dose? And sometimes even, like, when was it given? Like, methodology is really important, right? So most importantly is probably dose. It's like, how much was given? Because sometimes a supplement that you're buying has like 50% of what was shown to be effective in studies. And that's the one thing, like, there are so many parallels here when people talk about red wine being healthy because of resveratrol. It's like the dose is so important.
Exactly.
The amount of resveratrol you need a couple of bottles of wine, like that's not going to be helpful, right? So the dose is really important. The type of supplement, because it could be glycine blank, right? Like they can be attached to a salt or something else. Like you want to make sure that the supplement that you're taking is the same type as what's being studied. We see this a lot in the creatine supplementation field, where like people try to sell, because creatine monohydrate is what's been studied thousands of times. Mm-hmm. It's super cheap. It's super effective. Now you can't really market creatine monohydrate because you can't make it more expensive because there are people selling it really cheap. So what do people do? Instead of selling creatine monohydrate, they sell creatine hydrochloride or creatine blank. And it just like, it's creatine attached to a different molecule. And they're like, this is better because of X, Y, Z, or it dissolves better or blah, blah, blah. And it's like, there is no research on that. Like, you don't know if it's equally effective. You literally don't know if it's equally effective. It has to be the same thing that was tested. And I think recently, I could be wrong here, there was one type of creatine that was being marketed for better dissolvability because creatine monohydrate doesn't dissolve well. So it's somewhat gritty when you drink it. And so this company's marketing was that like, hey, our creatine, which is not creatine monohydrate, it's creatine something else, dissolves really well. So it's easier to drink, which was true. There wasn't really any research to substantiate its effectiveness. And I think there was some research conducted in the past couple of years showing that that type of creatine specifically isn't absorbed as well. So it's like, you fix the issue of dissolvability, but I'd rather have something that doesn't dissolve and is more effective than actually absorbing. So it's pretty complicated, but that's usually the route that people take when they market something. It's like, hey, this thing is important for blank, blank, blank. It's like, yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that your supplement is going to benefit those things, though.
Exactly. They take seeds of truth and then blow it out of context, out of proportion, and make, you know, irresponsible marketing claims, in my opinion.
It's essentially A leads to B, B leads to C leads to D. So A leads to D. And that's not always true.
I love that. By the way, Joey, you have a very like calm and measured approach to things. I appreciate it so much. And you embrace the nuance, which is something that I very much appreciate.
You know, it's so funny. People tell me I have a soothing voice. And when I listen to my own voice, I absolutely hate it.
Oh my God. I'm sitting here. I'm like, go to sleep. It's right here. All right. So before we wrap, I just want to talk about this app. And I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. I believe it's pronounced the Yuka app, Y-U-K-A. I cannot tell you how many messages I've received about this app. I believe it was launched out of France. I think it was 2017. It is now a wildly popular app used by millions of people. What it is, and I downloaded it because I wanted to see it in action before I spoke about it. So it's an app that it opens up a scanner and you can scan the barcode of any food or drink or whatever it is. And then it gives you a rating out of 100. And so what it does, let me just tell you, so Yuka rates food based on nutritional quality. So that's 60% of the rating, and additives, 30%. And then the remaining 10% considers whether the product is organic. All right. The app uses the Nutri-Score method. So it ranges from A, which is good, to E, which is the worst. And it assigns associated colors, with red indicating a food to avoid, green signifying a safe choice. Now, holy moly. I mean, I'm curious what your take on this, and I have more I'd love to share. But for me, it falls into this all or none, one size fits all, blanket vilification of things like conventional versus organic, the idea that all additives are detrimental. There's no conversation about the amount of additives that, you know, it feels very blanket.
You know, when you brought this up to me, the first thing I thought about was there might be a way to actually make an app like that that's actually useful and helpful. Right.
Joey.
It would just be like, what do you mean by nutritional quality? Right. Because when they're talking about additives and organic, if we talk about organic, that could technically fall under nutritional quality. So the fact that it's a different thing altogether is funny, because if we look at nutritional quality, we're just looking at how much of specific nutrients are in that food, right? There's some evidence that some organic produce is a little bit higher in some vitamins and minerals. So maybe the organic version has a little bit higher nutritional quality. I don't know. I have a million thoughts around this. I think there's one, first and foremost, a really maybe good way of making an app like that. Because I do think, like, I don't know, I feel like as professionals, we want everybody to understand things the way that we do, right? I feel like I have a really good understanding and grasp of nutrition overall. I have a really good understanding of my diets, and I know what food choices to make, and I feel good and confident about navigating nutrition. Most people don't, right? And getting to this point takes a lot of time and work. And I do think there's a place for something that is simple to help individuals get there, right? Because I don't know, sometimes, and I go back and forth on this, like, simplicity, the more you simplify something, the more you remove nuance, right? And if you remove nuance, there's obviously going to be some information that's not as accurate as it can be. But that said, I still think that some things that are simple can have an overall positive effect, right? And I talk about this a lot, because sometimes people, like, for example, a ketogenic diet, and I talk to my clients about this too. It's like, is it an optimal diet for health? No, obviously not. Do some people improve their health following a ketogenic diet? Yeah, right? Why? A number of reasons. Maybe they were following a super highly processed diet prior, like a typical Western American diet. Now they're eating more whole foods. They've reduced their caloric intake. They're consuming more protein, and overall health markers improved. So sometimes, like, what's optimal isn't what's necessary. What we need is something that's going to help people improve a little bit. And I think there are places for apps or tools like this that you can scan something and tells you, like, maybe good and bad is definitely not the right word, but mm-hmm. nutritious or less nutritious, right? And that's right. Not as good as, that's not a great marketing term either, but maybe it's like nutritious versus like fun food, because I like using that term, right?
Yeah.
But I wouldn't rate it based off of organic or additives. I would rate it based off of things like, is it a whole food or is it an ultra processed food? Is it something that's high in fiber or protein or healthy fats or not? Like, the grading scale would be completely different.
But then even then, Joey, it's so funny, because I've talked a lot about processed foods and ultra processed foods. And I sort of take the mentality, the approach of, I don't think we should just blanketly vilify that. I mean, altogether, because I know, as I said earlier, like, occasionally I'll have some processed foods, ultra processed foods. I mean, again, you were talking about their access issues for some people. I mean, we've spoken about that. It's more about patterns and the share of your diet, right, comprised of these foods. So I think that's what frustrates me, is like, okay, I open up my app, I'm scanning something that, you know, thing of Oreos, and it's going to be like, alert, terrible. Like, should I eat Oreos, you know, every day for the rest of my life? No, probably not, you know, but that
highlights the importance, because I would say you can eat an Oreo every day for the rest of your life, right? Because it also depends on everything else you eat. It's like, yeah. So I was going to bring up, like, one of the main issues with these apps is that it's just everything in the nutrition space is so hyper fixated on specific foods when that doesn't matter. Like, exactly. What matters is overall dietary patterns. So maybe an app like this, where you can scan what you're eating and it tells you, like, overall, is this a healthy diet? Because I think that can actually be measured pretty effectively, right? Like, you can look at somebody's overall diet and be like, hey, maybe these small modifications can be made. And when you look at overall diet, you're looking at the foods they're eating, but also the quantities.
Right.
So, like, you mentioned Oreos, and people are going to disagree with this, whatever. And I talk about this all the time, and people are like, how can you ever say that somebody should eat an Oreo? I'm not saying you should or you shouldn't. I'm saying you can and be perfectly healthy. You're just getting a little bit of sugar and some processed food, and you're having one Oreo a day. Like, it literally doesn't matter. And in some contexts, it can be beneficial. For example, I'll use the performance field. It's so funny, because in, like, the sports nutrition field, there's so much strategic use around things like candy and very simple carbohydrates mm-hmm. to fuel performance. Again, if you are a long distance runner and you run hours on end, you need very simple carbohydrates to fuel you during exercise. You're not going to eat some high fiber, some legumes, some beans, because you're not going to digest it in time. It's not going to get into your bloodstream quickly. it's going to cause an upset stomach.
You're like, going to poop yourself.
It's not what you're looking for. Sorry. It's true. But you could have something like an Oreo, right? Or something maybe even simpler, like some crackers that are just going to deliver some glucose quickly. So everything, first off, is context specific. Mm-hmm. Second, quantity really matters. There's no such thing as a good or a bad food. Mm-hmm. You can seriously be this is unlikely to happen because minimally processed foods tend to be very satiating and low in terms of caloric density. But you could theoretically be unhealthy eating things like beans, fruits, veggies, whole foods, if you just like eat way too much of it, right? So quantity really matters.
Yep.
There's the perfect example. I forget his name, but he was a nutrition professor who lost weight eating like exclusively Twinkies and fast food. And he supplemented to not be deficient in anything. So he was taking like a multivitamin and just eating like Twinkies and candies and stuff. And he lost a ton of weight and he was overweight to begin with. And all of his blood biomarkers improved drastically. And he just did it to prove a point, essentially, right? That like, hey, food choices matter, but quantity really matters. And the second thing he mentioned was like, I wouldn't recommend this because I felt miserable. I was really hungry all the time. I wasn't really fully satiated. It's obviously not a healthy quote unquote diet, whatever that means too, because there's so much nuance there.
Yeah.
Viewing nutrition from the lens of good and bad food is really ridiculous. And then rating foods on whether they're healthy or not because of additives is really ridiculous, because additives can be very healthy, right? Yes. Like, yeah. So I'm making a video on this now. Even when you talk about like fortified breads, it's like, yo, they're adding vitamins and minerals. Yeah. And people are like, these are not natural. It's like, it's the same exact stuff you find in your food. Maybe they're in a slightly different form for stability, for example, but they are the same thing. They are the same thing, right? There's no difference. It's so funny. People don't know stuff. I remember talking to a friend years ago when I used to personal train, probably back in like 2015, 2016, around there. There was a colleague of mine who was also a personal trainer. And I don't remember how the conversation came about, but we were talking about iron in food. And he was just like, oh, yeah, but the iron in food is different from like iron. And I'm like, no, it's actually iron is iron. He's like, no, it can't be. Like, how can I? It's like, it is iron, right? Like, right. And people like to say that, like, the natural form is different than this form. It's like, it all comes, if we distill it, it all comes from the same place. It all comes from Earth, right?
Your body can't discern, right? Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go on.
Yeah. And then with additives, people talk about things like emulsifiers and mold inhibitors and all of this crazy stuff. Because I'm posting a video tomorrow on this. This lady pulled up Sargento cheese and she's like, it has anti-caking agents. And she goes, and they're not found, these things are not found naturally. And the anti-caking agent that she was pointing to in the ingredients list is cellulose. It's literally fiber. And you get cellulose in a lot of plant-based foods, beans, apples, etc. You can go on and on. Like, there's cellulose and all this stuff. And the reason why it's added to cheese is because the cellulose prevents the cheese from clumping, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, if you don't want something with cellulose, whatever, get a cheese that doesn't have it. But then she like says, like, DM me whatever so I can send you some clean cheese. And I'm like, what the hell is clean cheese in the first place? Like, it's all cheese. Maybe adding some cellulose.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I like dirty cheese. But just wrapping up with the Yuka app, because I'm glad that you brought up that example. I was looking through some of the reviews and one really stood out to me. This person wrote, the app is helpful, but not consistent. They need to put more helpful recommendations and alternatives. It's very stressful using the app because everything you scan is toxic. They don't offer alternatives. So basically, I mean, in a nutshell, and I saw this in so many of the reviews, it was like, it's causing food anxiety because when you break things down in this very black or white manner, things are going to look really bad. And then it's like, oh God, well, what can I eat? And then the things that are labeled good tend to be more expensive. You know, Joey, you mentioned briefly about organic foods. And yes, I know there are some like small studies that might show a minimally, you know, increased nutritional benefit, but really the majority of research shows like there really isn't a nutritional benefit to organic versus conventional. And does it justify the increased price of these products? You know, it's out of control. But there's this really, I'm going to link to this in the show notes. this person, what is her name? I think, yeah, Elaine Gittle. She's a cancer survivor. She wrote this piece in Medium reviewing the app, and she was giving some examples. She looked at cottage cheese, which I was blown away because I'm thinking cottage cheese, this seems like a very healthy, maybe I'm wrong, but yeah, a very healthy food or whatever that means, right? But Yuka gave it a low rating of 45 out of 100. It labeled it as poor and it displayed a yellow light. And the reason for this, as you said, is because it contained an emulsifier, just automatically writing this additive off as dangerous. Yuka does provide scientific references to support its claims, but if you look closely, you could see that they're referencing mouse studies, simulated models that are not directly applicable to human health. They're talking about dosages that are so much, you know, higher than anything a human would ever be exposed to from eating a thing of cottage cheese. Elaine goes on to say how they contradict themselves. They cite the European Food Safety Agency. The EFSA's stance is that the additive does not raise safety concerns, but then they also maintain that Yuka considers the most recent animal studies. So basically, there are inconsistencies that erode the app's credibility. I mean, I could go on and on and on. They also vilify things that are high in calories. But then, like this person was saying, well, taking my specific situation, I have very low body weight. And I actually have been encouraged to gain weight. So I will sometimes reach for something that, you know, has more calories. So you can't take this very one size fits all approach. So my take on Yuka is that it's an oversimplification. I'm scared it's leading to more food anxiety, potentially disordered eating. That's my rating.
Yeah, I would probably bet that some of the foods that they say are good to eat too, they probably have some sort of financial incentive in. And I'm just guessing here, but for example, like Bobby Parrish, Flav City on social media. He's one of them. Like, he has his own app that does the same thing. I'm not sure if it's, I don't think it's the Yuka app. He has his own app that does the same thing. You scan stuff and it tells you good or bad. Yeah. And a lot of the things that say that are good or give you an alternative, like, he has an affiliation with them. So it's like, you know, and again, not to inherently say that having an affiliation with a food company is a bad thing, because it's not. Mm-hmm. Like, all of us in this space, we need to make a living. And truth be told, the nutrition space is not where you get rich, right? It's just not. So there's nothing inherently wrong with having an affiliation with a company. But if you, like, you have to take a bird's eye view on this. Like, if your whole thing is you say certain foods are good and certain foods are bad, and now you have an app and the app tells you yay or nay, and the app tells you that these foods are yay, and the foods that say yay, you have an affiliation with. It's a little bit tricky, right?
100%. Yeah, red flag.
And I wanted to touch on what you said about organic and non-organic, because the main difference there is, like, organic foods still use pesticides. Like, they just use organic pesticides. And two, the term pesticide itself doesn't matter a ton because, again, the dose makes the poison. Three, you can just wash your food if you are scared of pesticide residues. And I think, like most people, you should wash your fruit and your produce anyways, because there's dirt and stuff in there. And, like, it's probably not going to do much, but, like, I wash my stuff. I don't want it to be dirty, right? I've bought stuff and I look at it and there's dirt in it. Just, like, wash your fruit. You're going to get rid of a lot of the residues. I really do wish there was a way to simplify things for people, because it is complicated. And, like, people do get a lot of anxiety about this stuff, right? Like, should I eat this or should I not eat this? And for people listening, like, you can eat whatever you want. And I know that recommendation too is tricky, because sometimes people take it as you can eat the same amount of everything. And that's also not true. It's all goal dependent, how much physical activity you have. There's a lot that goes into it. But in general, you can eat whatever you want. And most people know what foods are quote unquote healthy and quote unquote unhealthy. And the goal is really to eat a little bit less, perhaps, of the quote-unquote unhealthy stuff and more of the healthy stuff. Or even not even focus on eating less of the unhealthy stuff, but really focus on eating more of the healthy stuff. Mm-hmm. Eat more lean protein, eat more legumes, eat more whole grains, eat more fruits, eat more veggies. If you intentionally do that, you'll, as a byproduct, reduce the consumption of the highly processed foods that are high in sugar and fat. And the reason why I bring that up is because I, like you, don't think that processing itself is a bad thing, right? Like, there are benefits to processed foods, mm-hmm. and there are some highly processed foods that are very beneficial as well. I think the issue comes in where we have foods that are highly processed for the sake of palatability, right? For how flavorful they are. So if something is extremely tasty and you have a hard time putting it down, yeah, you probably want to minimize that. You're probably not going to be overeating fortified sliced bread because it's just not that tasty, right? Like, it just really isn't. But anything that's like high in a combination of sugar, fat, and sodium is going to be pretty hyperpalatable. Things like chips, cookies, the stuff that we know we should probably be eating less of. And what I tend to do with my clients is tell them, like, we set certain habits around quantities of things that we should be eating. Like, hey, if you eat no fruits and veggies at the moment, let's target 2 servings and let's slowly work up till we get to 5 or 6 servings. Let's have a protein target. Let's follow a regular meal schedule. Let's have a fiber target. And these very basic nutrition related habits, behaviors, rules, whatever you want to call them. And I've noticed that when clients focus on just the stuff that they need to do, as a byproduct, they do a little bit less of the other stuff, but it's not mentally taxing. You're not thinking like, don't eat this, don't eat that, don't eat this. You're actually thinking, okay, I need to meet these goals. And that, I think, has been a much healthier approach for the people that I work with.
Love it. Love all of it. This was such a fantastic conversation. Really, thank you so, so much, Joey. One thing I just wanted to flag real quick about the Yuka app, I was interesting while you were saying that, is that their whole premise is that they're totally independent and they don't take funding, which I thought was really interesting. But to your point, I mean, I feel like every other app that I've seen does take funding, and do not get me started on Flav City, Bobby Parish. Totally agree. I mean, also has no actual background in health science or nutrition and just literally walks around grocery stores reading the ingredients and scaring the crap out of people about what not to eat.
Like you mentioned, what's the word? Contradictory. Because yes. He'll be like, this one has added sugar. Don't eat it. And then he'll point out a food that's like, this one's good. And he doesn't bring it up, but like, you see the ingredients and it's like added sugar. It's like, Okay. So, and who is it? Liam? Do you follow Liam, the plant slant?
No.
I'll have to show you the videos. Yeah. He's really good. He made one about Bobby, just like all his contradictions. And it was just a skit. Like, he's taking notes on what to eat. He's like, okay, no added sugar. And then it's a video of Bobby saying that something with added sugar is fine. And he's like, unless it's in tomato sauce. It's like, just like very, very silly like that. It's a great video.
I want to see. Oh, that sounds funny. Yeah. Really, I love your approach to everything. It's just so balanced and nuanced and really refreshing. Everyone, definitely go check out Joey's page. So that's dr.joeymunoz. Of course, I'll link to this in our show notes. Thank you all for tuning in today to Unbiased Science. We hope you learned a thing or two. Definitely follow along on social media at Unbiased SciPod. Subscribe to our Substack newsletter, the unbiasedscipod.substack.com. Totally free to subscribe. We put out a once weekly newsletter. There is a paid subscription if you're able and willing to support us financially. But again, none of our content goes behind a paywall. Also, definitely make sure to subscribe on YouTube, leave us a review on Apple, all those good things. And also check out my other podcast, Bites of Health. You can follow along on social media at Bites of Health Pod. That's Bites with a Y. 5-minute episodes every day. I interview pediatricians and we answer your commonly asked questions about our kiddos. So check it out. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.